Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Earlier this month, reporter Patricia Bournes with the Fort Myers News Press published her investigative report about the city of Fort Myers dumping toxic waste onto a plot of public land in the Dunbar neighborhood. Since that report, a no trespassing sign has gone up near the perimeter. But for 50 years, the area sat wide open with no fencing and no warning to neighbors whose kids have played in that lot for decades. Now activists in the community are calling in legal and environmental experts to evaluate next steps. Joining me in the studio to talk about her reporting on this is Patricia Bournes from the Fort Myers News Press. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Julie.
Also in the studio today, we have Willie Green. He's a pastor and a community member in Dunbar. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
We're talking about the city leaving toxic sludge in a city lot in the Dunbar neighborhood for 50 years. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Willie Green, can you tell me a little bit about Dunbar for people who aren't familiar with that neighborhood?
Okay, the Dunbar area is a section of the city that is located east of downtown Fort Myers and, of course, west for the most part of I-75. So it lies between the downtown Fort Myers and the I-75. It is a section one time called Safety Hill. The people moved from down closer to the river out on to what they thought was further away from the river so it would be safer from the high tides. And, of course, it gained its name from the school. The school there, the first school located in there, was Paul Lawrence Dunbar School, both elementary, middle school, and high elementary, senior high and junior high. And the community built around that. For the most part, prior to my coming to Fort Myers, and I came in 1953, it had the name, but very few residents. There were only about 6,000 people in the city of Fort Myers and only about 8,000, 12,000 in the whole county. So Fort Myers came a long way. We have still a long way to go.
So where does this particular lot lie? Are you familiar where this lot is?
Oh, sure. The lot lies about half a mile south of Edison. Edison Avenue runs east and west. And the lot is about a half a mile south of Edison Avenue, but it lies in particular from between Midway and Henderson and between Jeffcott and South Street.
Okay, so is it right there in the middle of a residential area?
Yes. At the time it was dumped there, there were very few houses. That area was developed by Cramlich Associate, or better known as Ken Atkin, and he named the area City View. And there were probably at the time in 1962, I would say it was probably less than a half a dozen homes south of Edison Avenue in that era. What happened is it became annexed into the city of Fort Myers. It wasn't even in the city at that time. It became annexed into the city of Fort Myers, and it, under the leadership of Martin Dyed and the other housing developers, we developed mainly Bonita Bay played a tremendous part in developing upper middle class homes in there.
Mm-hmm. So that area didn't have a whole lot of houses at the time that dumping happened, but then it just kind of the area grew up around where that dump site was.
Correct.
So Patricia Bournes with the News Press, how did you become aware of this dumping that occurred there and that there was an issue still with it?
Julie, I had been reporting on a kind of a plethora of junkyards, you know, unwanted land uses in the minority communities where all the heavy industrial zoning lies. And as a result of that reporting, I learned of, you know, the city having done some of its dumping in that area. And after a report about junkyards, I went on to find a memo regarding the site itself and where it was located, and in a 2015 memo, and then went on to look at request DEP records for the site, and was given also a city resolution dating May 1962 regarding the decision to use the site, the land, to buy the land and use it for lime sludge from the water treatment facility. It was a meeting held at 8:45 in the evening when, at that time, African Americans weren't allowed across the railroad track, so they could not have attended that meeting. They had no.
So there was a meeting where they decided we're going to go ahead and just dump this stuff right here.
Yes, there was an advertisement in the news press apparently to to buy the property for what were called municipal purposes. And those purposes were discussed and defined in the city meeting in May of 1962. So residents became aware, you know, as the trucks were dumping the sludge into what was at the time a big pond right in the middle of the block.
Is it normal for them at that time to have meetings at 8:45 at night?
Willie, why don't you answer that question?
Ruth, that's a little bit late.
Well, it were in those days. It was not only a little late, it was segregated. You wasn't even allowed to attend them even if you had the ability to be off from work at home at that hour. You would not have been able to attend the meetings. As a matter of fact, you would have needed to have a special permit to actually be east of the railroad tracks after 6 o'clock in the evening.
Correct.
So at this time, there were laws.
Segregated Fort Myers.
That you could not pass the railroad tracks after a certain time of day.
It was certainly the policy. I've never read the law, but it was certainly a policy. I have been a victim of the policy.
Well, whether it was a law or not, it was an understood
that's
that
right.
you—
That's right. It was a policy. It's a police policy.
Wow.
Right. So so what I found in the DEP records was that about 2007, I believe, there was an assessment on the site, and arsenic was found in the sludge at that time. The DEP asked the city for a remediation plan, an action plan. It took them about 700 days to respond. And although the DEP wanted the city to begin removing the material, the city cried poverty, and a compromise was struck whereby the city would just continue – would start a monitoring program of the groundwater. 6 wells were dug on the property, and at intervals, the groundwater there was tested. There was one soil sample in 2007. All of this time, for a good 10 years now, the residents were never told that there was an arsenic contamination in the soil or in the – you know, in the groundwater on the site. And meanwhile, this material had been sitting there for decades at a time when residents were on wells for quite a long time. And they had no drainage also for quite a long time. So anecdotally, people in the neighborhood will tell you that the runoff from the site, which was the color brown, would come into their yards. They were worried about their wells. They were worried about what was the nature of this runoff. I'm told that there were requests to get drainage, to have the sludge tested, and that they were ignored.
And that fell on deaf ears. So, Willie, what did you see? Did you see sludge there at this lot, or did you see runoff from it?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, one of the people that have been in the paper was an employee of mine. I happen to have owned a large landscape trucking company service station in Fort Myers. As a matter of fact, I was Fort Myers' largest minority employer. And several of my employees lived in the area. I never lived actually in there, but I've seen it, of course. And I was involved in civil rights. I came here as a civil rights person. And so the city, not only was it promised, it would, for the most part, ignore you. And in 1982, Veronica Shoemaker became the first black elected official. And she kept it before the city, but what could one person do other than keep your mouth shut if you want to stay there? And a few years later, 4 years later, Dr. Ann Murphy Knight joined her on the city council. And then, of course, they kept the issue alive, so to speak, until they passed on. Over the 20 years or so they were in there, the issue was alive, but not anything much did about it.
Nothing ever happened.
And finally, they got most of it did, because they finally were able to convince the legislators to annex that part into the city. See, it really wasn't in the city. So there they were asking the city to do something about a neighborhood that really wasn't in the city. That it was in
and that's the whole of Dunbar you're talking about?
That's right. And eventually it became annexed into the city. And once it became annexed into the city, it was pretty close to the end or nearing the end of their administration. And then administrations came aboard that were not any more concerned about the Dunbar era than what they have said in local news media. You know, we'll do it. But we don't know when.
Yeah, and that's the messaging that we got in the last couple of weeks. Were you surprised by that response, Patricia?
No. I mean, yes and no. I think that the DEP has cut the city an enormous amount of slack relative to, say, you know, private dumpers, you know, who are held to stringent standards and required to clean up. I think that the city elsewhere has designated brownfields, you know, because they can be redeveloped. This site specifically was never put on the radar. It's never been designated a brownfield.
What is that? What's a designated brownfield?
Well, brownfield is a piece of property that can't be used for anything because it's contaminated, essentially. And there are grant monies available to clean them up so that they can be used for something. You know, it's a piece of land that can't be used. You can't.
And how does it become that? That has to be voted on?
In Fort Myers, it has to be voted on. Exactly.
By the city council.
Yes, and the council never filtered this up to vote on it and make it one. And until it is made one, it's not it doesn't qualify for those grant monies. It can't apply for them. Now, the city told me that, you know, it itself can't apply for grant money because it did the dumping. Be that as it may, it's dumped elsewhere and it's created a brownfield because there's been a developer in the offing who say wanted to develop the property, and that developer could apply for the grant.
If somebody else is willing to do the paperwork and all that to try to
yes, and so this property just, you know, sat there totally off the brownfield radar. It just
what's
sat
around
there.
The property? Is it bordered by a bunch of houses?
Yes.
I'm trying to envision it. It's a square, and there's a bunch of houses all the way around it.
Yeah, they're single family homes. They're pretty nice homes. You know, not modest, but really nice. Some of them, and there are families living in them. They work. They have children. You know, it's a normal neighborhood. It's a nice, you know, it's a good family neighborhood.
And the current situation with the soil there, has it been tested recently? Is there still arsenic there?
It was tested in 2007. I understand that the city plans in the near future to do more soil testing there. And I think that that's a defensive position because children have been playing there for decades. And the area has been – it's public property, so it's city property. So – it's never been fenced. It's never been capped. It's never been signed until
Now it has a no trespassing sign.
Exactly, which I don't really understand how, since it's public property, by what authority you can say there's no trespassing. But yeah, okay.
Yeah. How do people treat that piece of land, Willie? I mean, in the neighborhood, do they just kind of – do kids really actually play out there? Did they used to?
Yes, because if you know anything about the neighborhood, the lots where the houses are built, about 80 by 125. Most of that land is taken up by the building of the house itself. So they have very small yard space. So for birthday parties and this kind of thing, you would park across the street on the vacant lot. You need only park over there. Now you've got children getting out of the car. And, of course, they have their softball games, and they return from school, and they'll walk across this property because their house is on all four sides. So if you're going to go over to visit your neighbor and you live on South Street and you want to visit your neighbor on Jeffcott Street, it just makes sense to walk across the property. And, of course, when you get out in there, then you find that it's a lower area of it, kind of a canal part where water is actually standing, but it's not very deep. So children plays in that water, goes through the water on their way to Jeffcott Street. The same if you were traveling west, of course, from Midway, and you're heading over to what would not be Henderson, you would be just going through.
So people traverse through it all the time.
Family members that live in the area.
Yeah. And have any of these people that live, you know, that border this, have they been, you know, sent a flyer or told in any way you might want to not play in the water right here?
No. There was not even a sign up there until Mrs. Boyne decided to bring it to the attention.
But it's been brought to the attention.
Now there are signs up that were put up, I think, the past Friday or so.
Yeah, it's been brought to the attention from the news.
And the sign
press.
Doesn't say it's toxic. It just simply says no.
It just says
no trespassing.
Yeah, by order of the Fort Myers Police Department. If you're just joining the show, we're talking about the dumping of toxic waste into a public city lot in the Dunbar neighborhood. It happened 50 years ago, but it's never been cleaned up, and neighbors are looking for answers. We were talking to the reporter who broke this story, Patricia Bournes, and also the pastor and community leader, Willie Green. If you have a thought or a question you'd like to call in with, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So this has come up with the city council a number of times, as you mentioned, by African-American city council members throughout the years. It didn't really get anywhere. Then the city annexed Dunbar into part of being part of the city. It's come up. It's kind of fallen on apparently deaf ears. Well, I don't know. I don't want to assume whose ears are hearing, but nothing happened really as far as cleaning it up. And you said that you reached out. We tried to reach out to city officials, and we haven't gotten any response. But so far, since you put out this article, we've had a new sign, and city officials said to you, Patricia, what did they say?
I had an email from the city manager, Saeed Kasimi, that the city would be in the near future obtaining soil samples, new soil samples. I don't have any further information on, you know, the vendor or exactly when, but I do expect, just simply as a defensive posture, you know, that they will do that.
And that's all you've heard, is that they're planning on taking some soil samples and seeing if there's arsenic there?
Yes. Yeah. As far as, you know, Kasimi did make a statement, a written statement to us when I first broke the story that I published in the story as a PDF file, saying that the city is committed to one day, you know, remediating the site. But one day is a promise, I think, that has been made to residents since the 70s or 80s, I believe. One resident, James Sheard, told me that he was promised that the city would begin stockpiling clean dirt, you know, that as soon as it had the money, it would start taking out the sludge and putting clean dirt in. And this is before any formal environmental testing was done.
And have you had any response from the Department of Environmental Protection?
The department has been responding to my queries all along. They provided the public records that I requested. I asked them, you know, their position and the city's position is that the groundwater tested from these six wells, and now five wells because one has been destroyed and it won't be replaced, it has been testing. Its last test was normal for arsenic, you know, for the arsenic level within, you know, within DEP standards. And therefore, they say that there's no sign that the arsenic is migrating off the site, that, you know, to contaminate other people's groundwater. But let's keep in mind that the groundwater off the site has never been tested, you know, and it's been running off for decades, and people had wells. So we don't actually know that. And the DEP had required six wells. Now there are five, and it's backing off. You know, it's kind of backing off its testing program.
Has their involvement kind of vacillated? Has it changed over the course of time? Were they more involved before and less now?
I feel like there was a definite change of tone. There was a long memo in 2010 that was clearly, you know, the DEP official who was involved with it at the time, who has since retired, you know, cataloged, you know, a request to the city for what's called a remedial action plan that wasn't forthcoming, you know, a 700-day delay in responding to the DEP. Although testing could have begun in 2008, it didn't begin in 2010 until 2010 because of that delay, you know, the testing at intervals, the formal interval testing. Mm-hmm. And so that's 2 years at least since the DEP knew that there was, you know, there was a memo saying we want you to start taking material, you know, small amounts of it, four truckloads, you know, a month off the site, and the city dragged its heels at that, and so that compromise that was struck, you know, it really seemed to me that the DEP was just laying down.
And Willie Green, you first moved to Fort Myers, and you said 1953, you said?
Yes.
At that time, Fort Myers had the hallmarks of a traditional deep South town. Lee County had two all-white public high schools and one all-black school in Dunbar. There were two hospitals, Lee Memorial for whites and Jones Walker for blacks.
Correct.
Public restrooms remained segregated at that time.
Right.
Given that background and the fact that the city of Fort Myers first started this whole toxic sludge dumping operation in the years before the passage of the Civil Rights Act, do you feel like the fact that the city chose a lot in the Dunbar area for this dumping, do you feel like it's a historical throwback to institutional racism?
Oh, yes. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. The city were acting out its normal tradition of having two Fort Myers, a black Fort Myers and a white Fort Myers. The white Fort Myers got everything, and the black Fort Myers got nothing. That was the in the school. I am one of the people who sued the school board, and it took 30 years to integrate the school. So I'm one of the people who filed. And in fact, only one left living. The rest is going on to the great beyond. And the city, the school board, the county, whoever, was highly segregated. And it was just a standard. They didn't have to write it and write it. They just did it. They just made certain if you had to do it and it was bad, we got all of the bad and all of the good. I can remember going in Dunbar High School while air conditions were in Fort Myers Senior High in Dunbar. Dunbar High School had nothing but fans blowing so loud, I don't know how they were ever educated.
You can't even hear the teacher. But, I mean, this all happened, you know, back in the 50s, but yes. Nothing has happened, and it's 2017. When you and members of your community hear these kinds of responses from the city and they see they don't see any action, how does that make people feel?
Well, I think they can say they see action. If you will note, Mrs. Boren told you that she first came up on this while she was working with Willie Green on Junkyard. I have been involved in trying to clean up even long before Veronica Shoemaker and Dr. Ann not complete their terms at the city council. We worked it to eliminate. And we have made some gain. There are many more to make. And this place is one of the places that we ran across. And really, I had heard about it, but never had been involved prior to this. But the place where we were working on that we had just received, the Board of Adjustment had told them to close down, was just a block or two away. And it so happened when we were there, the word came, there are more problems down the street.
Well, yeah, once you open the can of worms, you're going to find a lot. Right. And I wanted to ask, Patricia, have you heard anything about any concentrations of illness or anything that might be attributable to this type of contamination?
Only anecdotally, you know, and I don't think that's enough, but I do want to start doing record requests of property histories and well locations around and begin to try to collect that information about, you know, health histories.
It seems like we're kind of in like a fact-finding mode at this point now that the
– Completely, yeah.
Because there's a group of Miami law students in Dunbar Correct. Collecting residents' stories and Correct. Recollections they say they plan on coming back again this weekend.
Yes.
Did you talk with these people, Willie?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What kind of questions were they asking?
They were asking questions similar to what had been asked by Mrs. Boren. How long have you lived? How long have you been on city or municipal water? Were you here when you and used well water? And have any of your relatives passed on kindreds of acquaintance from the results that you thought was from the results of drinking the well water, mm-hmm. and when did they die, and what they died from.
Yeah,
and we'll find some interesting items.
Yeah, and Patricia, are you working with these people at all? Are you maybe able to get any information from them for future reporting?
Yes, I think that will happen. I, you know, this is just a very initial stage, is my understanding, for the Environmental Justice Clinic. I do think they'll come back. They, you know, they have short resources. I think they have to make a decision to go all in on this. And then they also have to, you know, they have promised their subjects confidential interviews. And I think that's important. And we'll be talking with them about a partnership, but I think we need to take it a step at a time.
Mm-hmm. And right now, at this point, there isn't any legal action yet. We're still just – everybody's just getting their information.
It is completely fact-finding. There is a local attorney, Ralph Brooks, who, you know, gave me statements, expressed his, you know, interest, and I believe he's looking to assemble, you know, experts, a team, and so on, but for fact-finding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have run up against time, so we're going to have to leave it there, but there's going to be more to this story, I anticipate. I'm sure, Patricia, you'll be staying on that, Willie Green as well. I want to thank you both for coming in and talking with me and sharing a little bit of this story with our listeners today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thank you, and my pleasure.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith, and our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.